Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, Josh, this seems about fitting right now.
Ah, why is that?
This is our 100th episode.
Oh, yeah, happy 100, Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
No, we didn't plan a big-time extravaganza for it and confetti going off everywhere. We didn't have, like, special things lined up or anything like that. To us, it's just another episode. But there's something that about this episode that I found funny in conjunction with our first episode. When we did our first episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All way back in 2013, Josh.
Oh, God, go back and reminisce.
Yeah, when we did our first episode way back in 2013, Manny Machado was injured.
Yeah, in a pivotal Tampa Bay Rays series on the road. Yeah, I remember that.
The Ravens came off of a huge loss.
Oh, yeah, that was deflating as well.
Against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
This one was against
Philly. Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. And we just had just so many things kind of line up now because Manny Machado made a key error in like the 12th inning, which cost the Orioles a game. And the Orioles are taking a huge nosedive faster than the Dow Jones right now. And the Ravens come off of a shellacking on the receiving end of a shellacking anyway from the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, well, it's preseason, though.
It is preseason, but people are debating already.
Yeah, I know.
Is the hit on by Terrell Suggs on Sam Bradford, was it clean or was it dirty?
Yeah, but the head VP of NFL officiating said that Suggs shouldn't have been penalized for it anyway. So, okay, if the VP says it, then okay, I'll take it for
it. If the VP says it, it must be true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. That is the one true. Happy 100. You can catch us on sfmsports.net, as you always have been. Audio Boom as well. Stitcher and Spreaker, our social media pages, the Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast on Facebook, and at B Sports Free number 4 All on Twitter. Josh, you have a blog here on Blogger, I believe, right?
Yeah, no, actually, Blogger was ancient, though. That was months back. It's sportsblog.com.
It's sportsblog.com now, but you are a blogger. Good save, Ray. Good save.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, on this week's show, the Baltimore Sports Free for All, it is not looking too good for the Baltimore Orioles, and that is putting it lightly, because I'm getting a little bit of a vibe here, Josh. I'm getting quite the vibe that I felt also around our first episode, 2013. That was the year that the Orioles had a good record, but it wasn't enough to finish the job and get into the playoffs. They missed the playoffs in 2013. That seems to be reminiscent of right now, because I remember pointing to that season and what was the turning point which caused everything to go downhill, and it was that Diamondback series, the Arizona series, where Jim Johnson just gave up everything. The reason why the Orioles didn't make the playoffs that year was because of Jim Johnson, and because of that it was because of that series in Arizona. Here we have it in 2015. The Orioles are playing the Twins. And the Yankees just finished sweeping the Twins. You are chasing the New York Yankees for the American League East. So you're thinking, wow, we got to do what the Yankees did to the Twins. We've got to take care of business in a four-game series. Nope.
Yeah. Before we get into the weekend review, of course, and let's just rewind back. Let's reminisce to episode 99. The Orioles were coming off of a four-game series against the Oakland Athletics. They were in sole possession of the second wild card spot, and they were standing with a record of 61-56. Jim Brewer was bringing his legion of fans from the New York Mets. Life was good and happy. It was funny. But until the Mets series came along, they split the series with them. Mets are a good team in their own right. They're leading the National League East, so okay, you'll take one out of two. No harm, no foul, and they could have won the Tuesday game, but we'll get to that in a bit. Minnesota Twins come to town. You lose the Thursday game in a schlacking. The next three games, three straight one-run losses. Now, let's run down the gauntlet here. Now, of course, on Monday, we covered the 4-2 win. Chris Tillman was your winner. Sonny Gray, a loser. Zach Britton was your save opportunist from that game. Now, the Tuesday-Wednesday series against the Mets, Jacob deGrom won that game as the Orioles lose to the Mets 5-3. Kevin Gausman was the loser at 2-5. Familia picked up his 33rd save of the season. Wednesday, August 19th, against the New York Mets at home, the Orioles win 5-4 off of a Henry Urrutia solo shot. In the bottom of the ninth, Zach Britton was your winner, improving to 4-0. Torres the loser at 4-5. Folks, just hang on to that 5-4 win because way this team's playing right now.
That's what you got right now.
That's all you have to hold on to right now.
That is your hope to hang on as of right now in a dismal time for the Baltimore Orioles, as they are now facing the Kansas City Royals in a four-game series. And wow, there's been a lot of four-game series lately. You just came off of one with the Athletics until you went with the Mets for the two-game. And then now the Twins and then the Royals. So this is crunch time for the Baltimore Orioles, and they are failing.
Yeah, so Thursday, August the 20th, starting a four-game series against the Twins. Orioles lose 15-2. Duffy, the winner, 2-1. Miguel Gonzalez, the loser at 9-9. We'll definitely be talking about Gonzalez in this show. Friday, August the 21st, Orioles lose 4-3. They were leading the game, Ray. They were leading this game 3-2. And Fian was your winner at 3-5. Darren O'Day picking up another rare loss, and we say that because he's been one of your best relievers throughout the course of the last four seasons. And oh yeah, by the way, free agent at the end of this year too. Jepsen picked up his sixth save of the season. Saturday, Orioles drop another lead, lose 3-2. Fian was your winner at 4-5. Tillman the loser at 9-8. Jepsen picking up his seventh save. Sunday, August the 23rd, Orioles had a 3-2 lead. Zach Britton blows a save. Orioles end up losing that game 4-3 in 12 innings. Perkins was your winner at 2-4. Mattis the loser at 1-3. Malone picks up his first save. And of course, the first game, Kansas City. Orioles were having a 3-1 lead with Ubaldo Jimenez. We thought we were going to get good Ubaldo, but gave up 7 earned runs in 5 2/3. Orioles lose 8-3.
Orioles were winning that game as well.
Medlin 2-0. Jimenez the loser at 9-8. Orioles right now, Ray, are at 62-62. Welcome back to Club 500.
Yes, the team that for the longest time was two games under 500 or two games over 500 have now reached back to 500 and are now losers of five straight as of this podcast. And lo and behold, it's not been a good series for this. And you get the vibe of, like I said, not only 2013, I'm kind of getting a vibe here just because of everything that's been going on with this past offseason. Dan Duquette had one foot out the door and everything that was going on where he's trying to interview for the Toronto job and no one would let him, and everything was going on with that drama of back and forth. And because of that, you've had a very lackluster offseason. People have been DFA'd. Guess who got DFA'd this week? Nolan Reimolt.
Crinkly Neck himself, who hasn't really had a good offensive week since May.
Yeah, and before that, it was David Lowe. So with that, these are all these acquisitions.
That's a pickup softball team right there, all those DFAs you got.
I mean, good grief. How many people have been designated for assignment for the Baltimore Orioles this year? It's uncanny, and it's just makes you just want to puke. I mean, it's just the way that this team was run going into this season. I was thinking, okay, Nelson Cruz, I understand why you would not keep him. Andrew Miller, what the hell? I mean, come on. There's your next Mariano Rivera right there. You just let him go? I mean, that to me was just, inexcusable to get rid of Andrew Miller.
The only one I completely understand from a business standpoint was the Nick Markakis one. Just judging from his production, yeah, granted, Nick Markakis is having a solid year with the Atlanta Braves. I understand that from a contract standpoint. You don't want to give a guy that much money when he is about to have neck surgery. I understand that. But when you have a guy like Nelson Cruz who came off a career year with the Baltimore Orioles, you mentioned Andrew Miller. How pivotal was the Yan trade from last year? Just for that bullpen right there. You had somebody besides Darren O'Day and Zach Britton. You had another guy. The Orioles could have used that other guy in those previous three losses to the Twins. That's crucial right there. Darren O'Day and Zach Britton are great relievers, but when you have to rely on those guys solely every single day to keep a one-run lead, you're not going to hold up much longer in this lead. You need that other guy.
Or what you need to run and start actually chaining some runs together. And that 18-2 game on the 16th, be damned. Just start like runs, then say, oh, I don't know, three runs, two runs, three runs, three runs. That's in the five-game losing streak, that's how many of the Orioles have scored. 2, 3, 3, 3, 3. That's it. You're not winning many games scoring that many runs. No matter what kind of a bullpen, no matter what kind of a pitching staff you have, you're living and dying by the home run, and right now you are dying.
Yeah, and you know what? God bless Gerardo Parra and Steve Clevenger and Henry Urrutia. They've done their damnedest in, on their side of offensive production.
Those were your standouts this week, yeah. Especially Gerardo Parra, because this guy is kind of showing, hey, maybe the Orioles were onto something with this trade right here, but it just wasn't enough for the trade deadline. And now you're just wondering, what exactly is this season going to pan out, and how does it pan out? Because you're looking at it this way. You have a lot of people that you've got to re-sign. People that, if you don't re-sign, are going to be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Royally pissed. Especially after that last offseason you had. Okay, coming off of AL East champions, you followed with that offseason where Dan Duquette wanted to be out the door. Okay, fine. You come up with this plan to replace Nelson Cruz. Kind of worked, okay? But you still don't have a guy who can take pitches for the Orioles. That's who you need right now, is a guy who can take as many pitches and get the starters tired to where the big boys can hit the bat with runners on base. There's been no runners on base for the Orioles. I remember in the Monday game against the Kansas City Royals, they were like, well, the Orioles haven't left anybody on base. But they've only scored 3 runs. I mean, that means they can't get anybody on base. So leaving runners on base is all a good stat, or it could be a bad stat. All depends on what type of perspective you have and what kind of where you're looking at it from, you know, a fan standpoint. But with this offseason coming up, with all these players that you've got to re-sign, a good portion of these players, or else, you know what? I mean, we were talking about in the pre-show how you were like saying the ceiling is lifted on Buck Showalter. Orioles hit the ceiling on Buck Showalter. I don't think it's been Buck Showalter. I think the Orioles have hit the ceiling on Dan Duquette.
I agree 100%.
If this man wants to go play hockey in Canada, let him go.
I agree.
Let him go.
I agree 100%. And this all stems back to the previous offseason where it seems like Dan Duquette was flirting, so to speak, with the Toronto Blue Jays president of baseball operations position that they've been dangling in front of him. And I don't want to say that Duquette was, you know, distracted this entire offseason, and whoever he picked up in a trade or picked up off of the waiver wire coming into March saying, I'm going to sell you this bill of goods and, you know, you fans are going to take it for what it is, because, hey, we had the same thing happen to us almost last year. We picked up these guys and they came through clutch. Steve Pierce was hitting good last year. Delman Good was hitting good. Delman Young was hitting good last year.
I like to know who Delman Good is. I want that guy right now.
Delman Young was hitting good last year, and we believed it. We said, okay, even though you didn't make any moves, even though you didn't re-sign Nelson Cruz, even though you didn't re-sign Nick Markakis, Dan, because you were the executive of the year last year, you know what, sir? We are going to take you at your word that this team is going to be just as competitive, if not, hopefully, better. That's not the case right now. This is a team, to me, Ray, that is lost on the field. Not only are they lost on the field, their confidence is shot. Completely shot. They can't keep a lead anymore. The starting pitching has no faith in the offense. The defense, which seemed gold glove caliber last year, is giving up crucial error after crucial error, and it's killing this team.
Of course, they also put Manny Machado at shortstop, and I'm like, maybe not for a couple of years, and maybe...
And they had Jimmy Paredes playing third base, and I'm sorry, I know we were high on Jimmy Paredes several months ago.
What kind of an experiment is that?
But you know what, though? If you can't field, you damn sure cannot play baseball. I'm sorry. I know David Ortiz is probably the exception because he's probably the best DH of all time. Of course, unless you want to say Harold Baines, but I think Harold Baines is the best DH of all time, and Edgar Martinez. But I digress. You can't play baseball if you can't field. You have to be of some use besides your bat.
Jimmy Paredes, 1 at bat this week. Yeah, just pretty much, where are you at, Jimmy Paredes? Where is your hot hitting that you've had, and you're like, wow, so...
It's like he forgot how to play.
He completely forgot. It's like all of a sudden someone went and just... It's like he was listening to Ned Flanders talking about apples at the theme park, and all of a sudden his brain decided to take an exit.
And then he just falls down.
He just falls down. That's what Jimmy Paredes looks like to me right now.
Oh my goodness gracious. And speaking of guys who seems like their brain has left their head completely and fell down, how about Miguel Gonzalez? This is a guy who we said months ago was, you know, had ice water running through his veins, a guy that was clutch in the starting rotation.
Hey, one of your better pitchers, and now look at what he did this week.
Just complete garbage.
In his one appearance, 5 innings pitched, 7 runs, 8 hits. 364 batting average. He scares No one.
Isn't it ironic that back in 2012, Miguel Gonzalez was called by many MLB pundits and writers the best number four starter in all of baseball, a guy that pitches like a number one, because he was like that. He was pitching like a number one pitcher in 2012. He was pitching not like a number one, but like a number two in 13. And in 2014, you could make an argument with him, Bud Norris, Chris Tillman, Wei-Yin Chen. Those guys were pitching like number ones down the stretch, and that carried the Orioles to an American League East pennant. But looking at the last several games Miguel Gonzalez played, let's go back to August the 4th, okay? He suffers a loss against the he suffers a loss against the Oakland Athletics, pitches 5 1/3 innings, gives up 3 earned runs off 5 hits. Against the Angels, no decision, but pitches 4 2/3 innings, gives up 4 earned runs off 7 hits. Against Oakland at home, gives up 3 earned runs off 6 hits in 7 innings, and in the previous game against Minnesota, takes the loss, 5 innings, 7 earned runs off 8 hits. Are we coming near the end of the Miguel Gonzalez experiment? Is this guy, is he what he is right now? Is he just a career long reliever at this point?
I don't know just yet. I mean, considering that baseball is a trending game.
He has not had a win since July the 25th, by the way.
I mean, he's going into Ubaldo territory of last year, where Ubaldo was like, what are you doing there, buddy? And he wasn't even on the playoff roster come October. But with Miguel Gonzalez, who do you replace him with?
No, you that's the problem, though. You had Tyler Wilson, who came up from AAA and was outstanding in his one start against the Oakland Athletics, and all of a sudden you just shoved them to the side and said, oh, no, we still got Miguel Gonzalez. We're good. But, yeah, you're going to be coming up on an offseason where you got to answer a lot of questions, especially his starting pitching, because Wei-Yin Chen, we know who his agent is. We've said this on the show many times, Scott Boras, and we know Scott Boras is going to be going to the team that has the most disposable income, who's willing to sign the lefty. You're going to have Chris Tillman there, who is solid some days, more days than not. You got Kevin Gausman, who, you know, God bless the kid, but he just can't seem to get a lucky win nowadays. He's pitching good. He's pitching good for a young, promising starter, but he's not getting that win that he so desperately needs to careem a momentum swing. And Ubaldo Jimenez is bipolar. We don't know if he's going to be good Ubaldo or bad Ubaldo, and this guy's on the second year of a $50 million contract, and oh yeah, by the way, he still has 2 more years. Who's going to pick up that contract if the Orioles want to trade him?
Oh, good grief. It's, yeah. Like I said, this offseason is key to the Orioles, especially if they miss the playoffs this year after winning an American League East championship. The pressure is on. The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
As of the date of this podcast, August 24th, 2015, we are coming near the end of the month of August and going into the final month of the regular season of baseball, September. Well, unless you count the first couple days of October. Nonetheless, though, we here at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All figure that what is the point of giving away 2 tickets to a game that will seem meaningless by the middle of September, unless the team comes together and puts together a solid run. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, the 62-62 Baltimore Orioles, the same team that dropped all 4 games at home to the Minnesota Twins, the same team that gave up a lead to the Kansas City Royals in the first game of their road series. Yeah, that'll happen when pigs fly. Well, I'll tell you this much. In accordance to what has happened, well, in relation to what has happened this past weekend with the stock market, with most stocks going down and some people wanting to buy in while stocks are cheap, we're going to take a gamble here. More of a Baltimore Sports free-for-all gamble. This is what we're going to lay out to you folks right here that are listening to this podcast, that are listening to episode 100 of the Baltimore Sports free-for-all. Instead of giving away several tickets for a September game, which would seem meaningless at this point, considering where the Orioles are at right now, me and Ray have came to an agreement that if the Baltimore Orioles, should the Baltimore Orioles put together a winning month in September and contend for the postseason, whether they're the first wild card, the second wild card, or by some form of a miracle, win their second consecutive American League East pennant, me and Ray have agreed to put up 2 postseason tickets for an Orioles postseason appearance. That's right. Instead of a possible meaningless game in September, we're looking to put together 2 tickets for a giveaway for a very meaningful game in October. That's if that happens. But I'm not going to hold my breath. But then again, I do hope that it happens. I will root for it.
Just don't write checks your wallet can't cash.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Boy, what an ass-kicking that was.
40-17 Eagles over the Ravens. My goodness.
Yeah, too bad
they
it's preseason,
practiced
right?
all week too, right?
They practiced together. They knew what they were going to do.
I know. They knew what they were going to do, and not so much that, but we have to bring up the question that is going to be all over Baltimore sports media all week that you are going to deny. There's a quarterback competition going on with the Ravens right now, Ray.
Between second and third string.
No, between second, third, and first string. Yes, I'm talking about Bryn Renner.
In that order?
Well, okay, third, second, and first. Whatever. The point of this is that there is a quarterback competition going on right now, and you are too blind to see it, sir.
You said the same thing when you corrected yourself.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyway, with Bryn Renner.
The only bright spot of this whole preseason game, by the way.
You are going to sub out a quarterback who plays every day, Josh, every game, started every game of his career, led you to a postseason, led you to a Super Bowl.
Same quarterback that threw two interceptions in seven pass attempts. By the way, 3 for 7, but of two of the four pass attempts he missed, he threw to the other team. So he was accurate in some ways, unless you lived in Bizarro World.
Yeah, well, with everything going on in Bizarro World, do not forget that in that Super Bowl year, remember that Joe Flacco had a 99-yard interception return from the other team. So there's that going on. He had his face buried in the turf. I mean, you had that going on with everything as well. But preseason, Josh. Preseason. They're working on mechanics, okay?
I know they're working on mechanics.
The only time preseason or exhibition have been a omen for a season to come, one should ask Bud Norris, because he sucked in spring training, too.
Yeah, and look how that turned out in his 2015 campaign.
Designated for assignment.
Oh, my goodness.
That's going to be the theme of the Orioles season. It's been designated for assignment.
Well, we're talking about the Baltimore Ravens right now, a team that is currently in exhibition play. You have to remember, even though it was 40-17, these games don't matter, folks.
They don't matter.
They don't matter. You know who it matters to? The guys trying to make the team.
No, nobody's going to start a social media movement as in preseason matters.
Yeah.
Hashtag preseason matters. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, ask Jordy Nelson if preseason matters. Ask Marquise Pouncey if postseason matters. I highly doubt they're going to agree with you at this point.
You know who is going to say that preseason matters?
Who?
Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, he's
gonna... It matters that he should have stayed healthy, and nope, torn ACL.
Yep, and you know, and this is why we don't hold. This is why, personally, I'd rather draft my players in fantasy after the final preseason game. I'd rather my first overall pick get injured in week one of a meaningful game than week two of a meaningless game that he only plays a few reps. So, yeah. But then again, the Green Bay Packers are the Packers. They have Aaron Rodgers. They'll figure something out. But for the Steelers, though, losing their starting center, their two-time Pro Bowl starting center in Pouncey, wow.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is with Olivia Munn, so he wins everything.
Yeah, exactly. But looking at the statistics, correcting myself again, for the Baltimore Ravens.
I thought you were going to say the Texas. I'm
the
like,
Texas.
The Texas.
That's a new villain.
The Texas Packers or something like that?
I guess if you had to look at any positives besides Bryn Renner doing well as the third-string quarterback for the Ravens, 15 for 21, 158 yards and two touchdowns. Looking at the Ravens running game, Justin Forsett actually carried the ball well, averaging 5.8 yards per carry on 5 attempts. Toussaint, the other running back, 3 carries for 20 yards. Buck Allen, unfortunately, who's trying to make a case for a backup running back spot, 6 carries for 19 yards, 3.2 yards per carry. And Lorenzo Taliaferro, and we got to talk about him here, 4 carries for 8 yards, 2 yards per carry average. Lorenzo Taliaferro is expected to miss a few weeks right now for an injury, and suffered an MCL sprain in Saturday's game against the Eagles.
Call him RG3.
Yeah, well, not yet. Not yet. I mean, I don't want to
write. I did say you got to keep your eye on Lorenzo Taliaferro in this preseason game, and yeah, I didn't mean that kind of an eye. Not injury eye, watchful eye. Just Taliaferro.
Yeah. And not to mention, you have Buck Allen, who you drafted out of USC. He's going to be competing with Fitzgerald Toussaint, also undrafted rookie Terrence McGee. And looking at McGee's stats, McGee averaged 4 yards a carry on 11 carries, 44 yards total. So you are going to have somewhat of a competition for the backup spot now because Taliaferro's injured. Not to mention, you have several other injuries you have to look at this point. You have to look at wide receiver Michael Campanaro, who impressed in the first week of preseason against the Saints, and now he has what is being quoted as a soft tissue issue.
A soft tissue issue?
Say that 10 times fast. Well, this is what coaches are saying right now.
That's exactly what they're saying. That was the quote verbatim from John Harbaugh.
Was and that a was soft a quote. That's a quote according to BaltimoreRavens.com. But John Harbaugh has said, I expect him back pretty soon, but you never know with those things.
Competing for a backup role, I got to say, that's still living the life because I'd love to compete for a backup role in the NFL.
And speaking of wide receivers, Breshad Perriman has yet to attend a practice besides the first one of the season. The preseason for the Baltimore Ravens. Still hasn't practiced, and John Harbaugh says he's out of that business in terms of predicting when players will return. When a head coach goes on a press conference and says it's in God's hands now, that means even the doctors don't know what's wrong with Breshad Perriman.
That's not a really good sign as well. I mean, that's Daniel Bryan syndrome right there.
Yeah, you're entering Daniel Bryan status. Is he going to be back in November Survivor Series time?
What the hell's wrong with him?
Yeah, I know. And not to mention you had other injuries too. You had offensive linemen Ricky Wagner and Ja Reed, but fortunately they're going to be looking to get back to practice on Monday. So there is good news there. But other than that, though, yeah, the Taliaferro move for a couple weeks there with the MCL sprain, that is going to suck in terms of the depth chart for the Baltimore Ravens running back system. And not to mention, again, the Perriman injury is still affecting the Ravens wide receiver competition because, yes, you have Steve Smith Sr., but other than that, it's wide open, Ray. You have Jeremy Butler. You have Darren Waller. Darren Waller, by the way, 3 catches for 21 yards, including a touchdown. And not to mention, you had a one catch 28-yard touchdown by Daniel Brown. So if you had to look at some positives there, I mean, the Ravens did distribute the ball amongst more than 10 receivers. So if you do have to look at that, you have to look at Kamar Aiken too, his production. Darren Waller, you have to look at his production. Crockett Gilmore, Max Williams. Again, Crockett Gilmore, Max Williams, we still don't know who the flat-out starter for tight end is going to be. I mean, some teams have already announced their starters at certain positions. The Houston Texans announced that Brian Hoyer is going to be their starting quarterback. But at this point, we don't know who the starting tight end is going to be. We don't know who the starting wide receiver is going to be. So that is another story in itself. Hopefully, by the third week against the Redskins, that'll be a different story. Now, moving on to defense, however, I will say this. One guy who has been improving so far this preseason is Arthur Brown. In this game against the Eagles, he had 6 tackles, 3 solo tackles, including a sack. Elvis Dumervil, 3 tackles and a sack. So the the arthritic pain that Elvis Dumervil had before the preseason even began doesn't look like an issue right now because the guy did pick up a sack. So he is sticking to his groundwork there as a position player at the defensive end. So you are sort of expecting that come the regular season. Now, speaking of defense, though, and this was a big topic of discussion this week, Terrell Suggs. Terrell Suggs and Sam Bradford in the same sentence.
Yeah,
I know,
that's
crazy.
That's not a good combination, is it? Does it mean Terrell Suggs injured Sam Bradford? Well,
or did Sam Bradford injure Terrell Suggs? No, I'm just kidding.
No, was it the fact that Terrell Suggs was targeting Sam Bradford? That is up for debate. But what isn't up for debate, considering that the NFL has now said that it should have been a flag on that play, but yes, on a read option play where Sam Bradford kind of is a runner at some point, Terrell Suggs was going after the quarterback like he's trained to do and still goes after the quarterback like he's trained to do and should from here on out. And a referee inadvertently threw the flag because he thought he was targeting, you know, his legs or going low on a quarterback and going with the Tom Brady rule. But instead, it was the RG3 rule where it says, no, wait, when a quarterback does that on a read option, he is a potential runner, and therefore, the protections that are awarded a quarterback for being a defenseless player, do not apply on this rule, and therefore the vice president of officiating has said it wasn't, it shouldn't have been a flag. He was within the rules. Everybody else is saying he was in the rules. You know who's not saying he's within the rules?
Who's that?
Philly.
Oh, imagine that. Yeah. I mean, I'll say this about Terrell Suggs. He is a volatile player when he's on the field. The guy's very aggressive. But at the same time, I'll say it about this play, because I saw that play too on Saturday night. I wouldn't say he's... I didn't say he crossed the line, but he was on the line. He didn't step over it or anything like that. Did the play look dirty on television? It did. But at the same time, like Suggs said, if you're going to do a read option with a quarterback who had two knee surgeries, that's on you. And, you know, I don't agree with defensive players all that much if they're in the same sentence of a dirty play, but I agree with Terrell Suggs on this. The Philadelphia Eagles knew what they were doing to Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford was carrying the ball at the time. Suggs was going to go after Sam Bradford, and you know what? I'm sorry to say, Sam, you know, but it's your own damn fault. I'm sorry. I mean, you had two knee surgeries. The guy's going after you, and what? He can't hit you? I mean, what are we coming to in this league?
You're Sam Bradford in a Chip Kelly offense. You got to run the
read
option.
And you may possibly beat a starting quarterback too.
Yeah. So how would you like this? Have a fantasy team? Sam Bradford. Danny Amendola.
Jordy Nelson. Your first overall pick. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, going into week three against the Washington Redskins, who seem to be a habitual opponent every NFL preseason with the Baltimore Ravens, looking at the game itself, we're not going to predict scores or anything, but who really needs to put on a good showing here? Because you have to remember, Ray, the third preseason game is the only preseason game where the majority of the starting offense, starting defense, starting special teams are going to be on the field for both sides. Who has to step up to make fans forget about last week?
Probably going to be somebody on the defensive line injuring RG3.
No, stop. Don't say that. Didn't he have a concussion?
He had a concussion in the last game. You're looking at your tweets like RG3 being looked at by
Jake
doctors.
Jake Gruden's not going to throw him out there.
And being taken off the field. Yeah. This is flip a coin on the Redskins.
I'm
going to
say Joe Flacco.
Ravens.
I think Joe Flacco has to make people forget about the two interception performance, because if he puts on another crappy performance, then you're going to have that same Baltimore pessimism about Joseph Vincent Flacco going into week one against Denver when they go on the road. And if that doesn't pan out, then guess what? You're going to still be on the West Coast in week two against the Oakland Raiders, who may possibly have a team, a good solid young team with Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. But then again, that's a big if. So, yeah, Joe Flacco, I think he's the guy you got to watch for. I think Buck Allen, another guy, since Tyler Farrow's going to be out, he has to step up. And we need to figure out who the second receiver is going to be, because unless Breshad Perriman, by some form of a miracle, comes onto the practice field and practices this week, we do not know who the number two slot is going to belong to in the receiving corps.
My player that can make you think about last week's performance, that can step up and do everything... the Washington Redskins.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
It's the dog days of summer. Kids are going back to school. The carnivals are winding down. Shark Week is over. And WWE SummerSlam has come to pass. And I was quite impressed by this event. I mean, yeah, it had its ups and downs. But overall, I mean, I'm not paying $60 for it anymore, so I can't really complain too much.
No.
I mean, it's $10 a month for everything that goes on, and I'm watching this, and I actually got a little bit of enjoyment out of everything that was going on. In terms of SummerSlam weekend, because you had NXT TakeOver before that, and then SummerSlam then, and then Monday Night Raw afterwards, is it safe to say the Monday Night Raw after SummerSlam has become like the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania?
Dare we say that? Dare we also say that maybe the WWE should consider holding an outside event for SummerSlam? Well, maybe
down
the road.
That would make sense. That would look cool, actually, to tell you the truth, because, hey, it's WWE SummerSlam. How about getting some fun in the sun for some little bit of wrestling? Outdoor wrestling looks cool, by the way, if it's done right.
Yeah, I mean, they're in New York City. They could have done it with either the Mets baseball stadium or the Yankee stadium. I mean, you could have portioned it off somewhat with the crowd, but... then again, I guess most stadium attendees, you do have to make your revenue in terms of being in the green. But yeah, when you looked at SummerSlam 2015 and you saw the marquee, Brock Lesnar, Undertaker, John Cena, Seth Rollins, Stephen Amell, John Stewart, like, What? Is this a wrestling show or is this like a entertainment talk show? What are we watching?
Okay, everybody was downing on Stephen Amell. I mean, they did it like a kayfabe thing. But I was actually looking at people like, oh yeah, Stephen Amell's going to get killed. It's going to look bad. I mean, come on. It's a Hollywood actor right in a wrestling ring. He doesn't belong there. He proved otherwise. He performed better than the people on Tough Enough right now.
He actually performed better than some of the guys that were in the lower card as we review the entire card here of SummerSlam now.
Let's talk about the Amell Neville versus Stardust.
You want to talk about that first?
Cosmic okay. King.
All right, let's start about with that first.
Considering that was the match that had all my friends hyped that I hadn't watched wrestling in over 10 years, and I was hyped about it just because Stephen Amell is awesome. So we look at the match, and he comes and gets tagged in very quickly, by the way, because Stardust's like, I want him. So he's like, okay, he tags him in and leaps like about a good 8 or 10 feet across the ring ropes and goes in there, takes a few bumps, does a flying cross body. Yeah, okay, I'm impressed by Stephen Amell. And then Neville comes in, red arrow from the second turnbuckle, yes. Red arrow perfect, yes. After Stephen Amell hits the cross body, okay. Quick match, done in succession, awesome.
Yeah, and I guess the whole point of this match was that if a celebrity is completely invested in the product, is a dedicated fan, usually 9 times out of 10, it turns out great for the product.
And it doesn't hurt that Stephen Amell is in fantastic shape and does 90% of his own stunts on both Arrow and the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies as Casey Jones.
Yeah, and I guess what we can take away from this is that Stephen Amell will be warmly received the next time he comes back into a WWE ring. I actually hope he does come back.
He said see you again.
I want to see Stardust versus Green Arrow. I mean, that will actually be quite a match. Maybe WrestleMania? Maybe at WrestleMania.
With the way he performed and the little bit of training with his schedule that was going on, I mean, if he trains from now until WrestleMania, the guy will be like freaking Neville himself. He'll be doing... I always made a joke, since Stephen Amell is Canadian, that his finisher should be the Canadian Destroyer. He could probably do the Canadian Destroyer at WrestleMania if he trains hard enough, which the guy does. So we're talking about that match. That match did not disappoint. I guess the first match that was on the cards was
Sheamus versus Randy Orton. Mr. Money in the Bag, Sheamus.
Now, I was not interested at all in this match.
Yeah, because it's happened 1,000 times.
I was like, okay, we can skip over this if I wasn't watching it live.
No disrespect to the performers, but when you put the
I've seen it 1,000 times, and I also know that when this match happens, the crowd becomes bored and starts going absolutely nuts and starts chanting for Randy Savage instead of Randy Orton. No, it actually was a decent match. I liked it. Good opener to the a good opener to SummerSlam, considering the fact that it was Randy Orton who cashed in 2 years ago headlining SummerSlam, and now he's beginning SummerSlam.
Yeah, and I hope that the feud is over, but you know WWE creative, when it comes to certain guys, they can only pair him so many times before the fans get bored. But either way, it was a solid match to open up the night. The Fatal 4-Way for the WWE Tag Team Championship. The defending champions, the Primetime Players, were defending against the Lucha Dragons. Yeah, who expected them to win? The Los Matadors. Yeah, who expected them to win? And the New Day. Could they have won? They actually did. And not only did they win, Ray, they won over the New York crowd.
Yeah, they were
New Day is back.
Yeah, they were the bad guys going into this match, and nope, they were they were favored by the by the New York crowds. They're saying New Day sucks. They were just going New Day and watching them celebrate in the ring, and that's also kind of funny to look at. The guys are entertaining. They have completely rebounded from their
Big E makes that group right there.
Yeah, they him and Xavier Woods is pretty good as well. Kofi's just there.
Well, Kofi is the athletic talent there, but Xavier Woods is the brains. Big E's the comedic relief. But yeah, Xavier Woods, if you would have watched Monday Night Raw, the Raw after SummerSlam, Xavier Woods was playing, what was it, the
trombone? He was playing the trombones, everything like that, and was playing taps for when they beat whoever they were facing, the Lucha Dragons. Yeah, they were playing taps for that, and just everything that was going on. The guys have completely rebounded from their disastrous debut, and have all of a sudden gotten over. It's incredible.
Yeah,
I like it.
And we were talking months ago, and this was before the Tyson Kidd injury, we were talking about how the New Day and Cesaro and Tyson Kidd were the two tag teams that nobody was interested in to begin with, and then they elevated the tag team division. And no disrespect to the Primetime Players or anything, they were a solid tag team when they got back together. But on Monday Night Raw, everything changed when the Dudley Boys made their triumphant return after many years of obscurity, independent signings, TNA. They came back, and they completely shoved the Primetime Players aside and said, nope, we're taking this tag team back. We're taking this division back. So Yeah, the New Day and the Dudley Boys. That is a rivalry that we're probably going to see down the road, maybe Night of Champions.
And it's going to be pretty fun to watch as well, because the Dudley Boys are still entertaining to this day. And watching them on Monday Night Raw, they haven't aged. They look the same.
Nope.
You haven't seen them on a WWE television show in over 10 years, and now all of a sudden they're back, and they're just got the chemistry working with them as well. So with everything that was going on with that match, and the Fatal 4-Way Tag match at SummerSlam was incredible. I enjoyed it, especially the Big E spot where he like came out like a missile and tackled, I think it was Darren Young.
Yeah.
And it was just a fun match to watch, and good ring work all around. There was another match we could talk about here, and that's
Dolph Ziggler versus Rusev, which was in a
double count-out.
Highlight of that match, come on. The highlight of the match was Lana versus Summer Rae. You know it, and I know it, and everybody else knows it.
That should have been an intergender tag team match from the get-go.
It should have.
You're using SummerSlam to build something for that? I mean, no, you should have the intergender tag team match at SummerSlam and have it to where Lana's in-ring debut and everybody goes absolutely nuts at SummerSlam. I think it would have been nice to have, but... Oh, well, moving on from that match, it was the tag team came up next, and we already talked about that.
Intercontinental Triple Threat.
Ugh.
Ryback versus Big Show.
Not interested.
There has to be other competitors besides Big Show and The Miz to compete against Ryback here. I know
there's going to be. There's going to be, because you got all this talent now on the roster. I mean, Kevin Owens. How about Cesaro? How about, Sami Zayn when he comes back from injury? Neville?
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of people that can compete for that Intercontinental Championship.
Yep.
Just stop rehashing Big Show and Miz and Ryback. We've seen it many times before. We don't want to see it anymore. We're done with it.
Okay. The Shield versus the Wyatt family. No, I'm just kidding. Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose versus Bray Wyatt.
Best
and Luke
buds.
Harper.
Best friends
Is
forever.
Everybody could have. Yeah. That was a solid tag team match. You saw some high spots there from Dean Ambrose. Roman Reigns performing his big move set against Bray Wyatt, pinning Bray Wyatt.
Roman sleeping.
Yeah, we got to talk about that, because the Wyatt family debuted a new member of the family on Monday Night Raw after losing to Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. Well, they were about to lose to Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose again. And who is it? Braun Strowman.
The guy is like a bodybuilder, fit type guy. I thought you thought he was the Mountain from Game of Thrones.
At first, I thought he was.
Halfdor Bjornsson, I think the guy's name is, who's just absolutely incredible in terms of strength and everything else that the guy does. But no, it was this guy looked like he ate Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper for dinner. As soon as the lights went off, I was like, oh my god! It's like Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper merged together. They fused. They used fusion. They created Ultimate Bray.
They combined and made a superhuman.
A super Bray.
Yeah, so Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, if this feud is going to continue on with the Wyatt family, they need a third member.
Kane?
No, I don't think so.
Masked Kane?
Eric Rowan again? Make him a face again?
I don't know about that, because he was kind of casted aside, and he's a little ways away from that. But okay, moving on to the next match of SummerSlam.
Title for title, WWE World Heavyweight Champion Seth Rollins facing against the United States Champion John Cena.
I would have said match of the night if it wasn't for a match later on, but this match was incredible. Seth Rollins looked great in this match, and I think that puts him a little bit higher up now on the echelon in terms of exactly what people can say. I mean, yeah, he's always been a good in-ring competitor and a good person on the mic, but this, I think, just put him in the superstar status with this match right here. Good amount of homage moves with a 5-star frog splash. That dude got some air on that, by the way. And a bunch of other things he was doing where he picked up Cena and put him in an AA himself, and then everything else that was going on. But the highlight of it was not going to be a clean finish. It was Jon Stewart coming out and turning heel and hitting John Cena with a chair.
And his reasoning, Ray?
Because he didn't want him to break Ric Flair's 16-time record.
Which became a misunderstanding on Raw, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
But even though John Stewart said, as good as you are, you're not better than he is. And you know what? We could say that about many, and Ric Flair said that too. Records are going to be broken. It's like when we see, guys like Peyton Manning breaking Brett Favre's record. You could be the biggest Brett Favre fan in the world, but you know eventually the record's going
to
fall.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Ric Flair's Al Bundy and wants to go back to his high school and sabotage and somebody sabotaging his record.
Yeah. So maybe it's the last time we see John Cena and Seth Rollins. Who knows? Maybe Survivor Series we'll see him again. But yeah, more on to Raw later on, of course. Okay, Team PCB, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch versus Team Bella, Nikki Bella, Brie Bella, Alicia Fox versus Team Bad, Naomi, Sasha Banks, and Tamina. This match, I think, could have been better as a triple threat tag team match.
And if they actually had something to fight for.
Yeah, that too.
Instead of just bragging rights. I mean, they're trading victories and defeats like crazy. And it just like seems like it's not going anywhere. It's like, hey, this is a showcase of these new divas. I'm like, okay.
And a divas title seems like it's being held hostage right now.
Yeah, let's see something happen. I would love to have seen the crowd in Brooklyn start chanting, defend your title.
Yeah, and I guess that's my only gripe with this whole feud right now is that, look, even though you love doing this whole turf battle that you have going on with the Divas division, eventually one of you is going to have to be competitive in this whole thing and say, I want the gold. I want that title right there.
You want that butterfly belt?
I don't want the butterfly belt, no.
I mean, that's kind of what they're fighting for right now.
That is what they're fighting for right now.
At the same time, though, it was the match beforehand in NXT TakeOver between Sasha Banks and Bayley that stole the show. This match could not even come close to that amount of hype that match had. It was, I guess, decent in-ring work, but at the same time, nothing to fight for, nothing on the line. It was the weaker match of the card, I think. And
Do you think Sasha Banks was emotionally drained from the night before going into this match?
Not emotionally drained. I think just more physically drained. I mean, that was a hell of a match, though, between her and Bayley. I mean, that was great. That was when you hear people start chanting, this is wrestling during a women's match. You've done something right, and that hasn't happened on Raw or SummerSlam just yet. And with that going on, let's see what can hold on right now. But to me right now, a Divas match is still a bathroom break.
Kevin Owens versus Cesaro, the match before the big match. I think this won't be the last time we see these two compete.
And that one stole the show.
That one stole the show.
There was nothing really on the line for these two either, but wow, the in-ring work and the chemistry these two had, amazing.
Absolutely.
The crowd just ate it up and was completely in the match, and Kevin Owens the night before
he needed this win too.
Yeah, Kevin Owens the night before lost to Finn Balor for the NXT title.
And a good match.
With that, is Kevin Owens now finally a part of the Raw roster, like full time now? Permanently?
Permanently.
Instead of just going back and forth between NXT and Raw? I don't know. We'll see what happens going forward. But now we move on to the main event, Taker versus Brock Lesnar. A match 15 months in the making.
15 months in the making, minus sporadic appearances.
Yeah, with that, though, it was Undertaker trying to turn heel by kicking Brock Lesnar in the nuts twice. And then with this match going on, very good match, by the way.
Very good match.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. The crowd was going nuts, and Undertaker still got it. Everybody was, like, knocking on him for his performance at WrestleMania 30. The guy had his bell rung and was concussed at the very beginning of the match, like, early on, and therefore couldn't perform up to his standards. He made up for it, though, and SummerSlam, too, because people were complaining about his performance also at Mania 31. Bray Wyatt was injured, too. So you had the concussion at 30 and the Bray Wyatt injury at 31. And now with this, it was clean and everything was going on right. It was amazing. Even had the little memory of Brock Lesnar laughing at The Undertaker and then Undertaker sitting up and maniacally laughing at him. That's going to create a bunch of memes later on down the road.
It already has.
And
it's taking off like Firestorm.
And a bunch of GIFs and a bunch of vines. It's already going on right now. I'm looking forward to seeing what that comes out. Then a not-so-clean finish where the timekeeper goes rogue and rings the bell before the ref even calls for it.
He did tap, though, Ray.
Because Undertaker did tap, but that's not the timekeeper's job. And if the ref didn't see it...
He was a big fan, though.
The ref didn't see it, it didn't happen.
That is very true in the world of professional wrestling. Now, a couple questions, though, we got to ask before we end this segment here. Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, where do they go from here? I mean, obviously, in this new era of WWE, they are tied 1-1 right now. You had the
new era, because they fought in 2003, Josh.
We haven't forgotten about that, folks.
That's why
we said new era.
New era of the PG era. Everything just wiped the slate clean. I think baseball should do that with their stats.
Survivor Series, WrestleMania, you think?
I'm gonna go with Survivor Series.
You don't think they'll do a WrestleMania rematch?
I think they might actually hold that for Undertaker Sting.
You think so?
Maybe, especially since on Raw, Sting returns.
Yep, we got to get to that, too.
And is going into the title picture.
Which was surprising to me because it seemed like WWE had no plans for Sting moving forward to this year. But I guess it seems like you're Seth Rollins. You beat almost everybody on the roster. You defended your title against almost everybody in this roster. Defended against a legend. Maybe put on a classic for the ages. And who knows? Maybe Sting wins. I mean, is that the point? Is he at the point of his career where maybe he should hold the title one time?
Yeah, I would think so. Hold it once, then.
Oh, he did hold it though.
He did hold it on Raw. He held it.
He held it.
I'm talking about holding it in the record books. Nobody remembers you holding it on Raw though, except everybody was going crazy on Twitter about it.
Yeah, Dean Ambrose held the title one time, and
he stole the title. What are you talking about?
He stole a couple titles, but that's why we love Dean Ambrose.
I wanted him to pawn it though.
Well, there is your SummerSlam 2015 review, and hopefully we'll talk to you the next time Survivor Series 2015 rolls around.
Until then, this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall. Real quick, what will we be talking about next week?
We will be talking about...
hopefully a winning Orioles week.
Or we'll be playing taps for the Orioles. I got it ready.
You do have it ready?
Yes, I do.
All right, Baltimore Ravens, do they beat the Redskins, or does it even matter?
Doesn't
matter.
Nope.
Will we get any good college football news going into the Big Ten season?
Maybe. I don't know, but this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
Welcome back to Club 500.